the Snyder & Associates podcast series, a civil engineering, planning, and design firm focused on thinking beyond engineering to improve the quality of life within the communities we serve. This episode's hosts are Lindsay Beeman, Wes Farron, and Amanda Rodell.
Hello and welcome to today's podcast, where I am talking with Wes and Amanda about inflow and infiltration. First off, Amanda, can you tell me what is inflow and infiltration? I think we sometimes call that I&I. Can you tell me what those mean?
So inflow and infiltration is pretty much when stormwater or groundwater makes its way into a sanitary sewer system, whether that's going through manholes or leaking in through cracks in the pipe. And if this is in excess, it can overload the wastewater system and cause overflows, backups, and other problems within the system. Infiltration in specific is when groundwater enters the sewer, and that can be through cracked pipes, root intrusions, damaged service connections, or degraded manholes. And this is typically a slower process. It takes a little longer for that to occur. Now, inflow is when surface stormwater enters the sewers, and that could be through damaged manhole covers when it's running down the road and kind of slips into the system, storm drain cross connections, or when yard and roof drains are connected to the sanitary sewer.
Since residents don't typically have a sewer bill, I mean, there's still that excess sewage going somewhere and someone's paying to make sure it's managed, correct?
Yeah, a lot of systems have pump stations, and increased flow is going to require that pump to run more often, which is going to require more power, more wear and tear on the system. It might require repair and maintenance sooner, cost increase there. And a lot of times that's buried cost because the average citizen won't see it. But it is going to be reflected in the operating budget of the system. And then the operating budget has to be made up with either taxes, sewer user fees, or things like that at some point.
Okay. Can you tell me, how do we know that we have an I&I problem? Or how do we define the scope of this?
So there's a couple different ways to find out if your system is having problems with I&I. One of those ways is looking at your pump stations and seeing how often they run. Are they running continuously or more frequently when storm systems are coming through? Another common way that people notice I&I problems are through backups and overflows in the system, which we typically try to avoid. But if those are occurring during storm events, typically that's a good note that I&I is occurring in your system. And then one of the more common ways is looking at significant spikes in flows at flow meters or at your water treatment plant or wastewater treatment plant. And the EPA even has guidance for municipal systems for what your flow should be per capita per day. And if a community system exceeds these values, that might indicate a problem with I&I.
I'd add to that too. Sometimes you may have an issue and the community may not even realize it. It's just part of how it's always been operating. You design for mostly just your sanitary sewer flows, but there is a factor in there for some peaking that you're going to get no matter how tight you build a sanitary sewer system. But there's excessive peaking that can come, especially with older systems, that is beyond that design level anticipated peak flow. Sometimes you might notice that in one of those immediately tangible ways, but other times, it might take a study with flow meters or other ways to measure flow during the dry season, base level flows, and then compare that to what kind of flows happen during wet weather event to see what that peaking factor is. And there's some guidelines on what is a typical peaking factor versus what's an excessive peaking factor that would indicate unacceptable levels of I&I.
That's a good answer, especially when you think about a lot of the rainfall events we've seen to have over the last decade. I think a lot of system operators and managers can say they can reflect some correlations there. So that's really good advice. Other than knowing you have a problem, how do you go about identifying where it's coming from? You might be able to see it overflowing a manhole, but that's not the exact manhole's problem, correct?
Yes. If you see a manhole backing up, it could show that you're having problems downstream and that it's just backing up and that was the weak point in the system. And that's where it's going to come out and show that you might be having these issues with I&I.
It kind of comes down to, as I mentioned before, the difference between what is inflow and what is infiltration, part of the I&I. Sometimes with flow metering, you can divide up a system into different sections and monitor the flow during dry seasons and wet seasons, and you can kind of see a correlation between those peak flow times when the flow in the sewer is elevated, whether it comes immediately after a storm event, so you can overlay those graphs and that information onto rainfall. And if you see a real significant peak right after the rainfall, or right with the rainfall, then there's a good chance that that's an inflow type impact where it's the floor drains or sump pumps or open manholes. We've seen that in the past where there's manholes that run down through a creek drainage way and there's manhole covers that are off and the creek just goes right down directly into the sanitary sewer. Then also the data can show the opposite or the other side of that, which is the infiltration side, that if that peak is more drawn out, kind of delayed from the rainfall event, it can indicate a lot of times what would be primarily groundwater inflow coming through the cracks in the pipe or even sometimes through sump pumps as they're kind of delayed as the groundwater comes up around homes and gets into those footing drain systems. A lot of times it's a good idea to do a comprehensive look at your INI, both to look at, do we have footing drain in a certain neighborhood? Is the pipe an old pipe? So is it going to have a chance of a lot of infiltration coming in the cracks, or is it new pipe that's fairly tight? We've done studies where it's just go look for open manholes, things like that. So a lot of times it's going to take a comprehensive look at all these different ways to kind of pinpoint where the issue really is. And that helps go to the next step, which is then how do you fix it?
I think that we addressed early on the making the dent in this to bring down the INI. The purpose of that is to save money in the long run on downstream infrastructure. You're going to have to spend the save. And when do you start to spend the save? Are there timing implications? When does it make sense maybe to start looking at some of these things?
From my perspective, it makes sense to look at them if you're seeing wide swings in your sewer flow. If you're seeing lots of high peaks during rainfall or during wet seasons, then it makes sense to start looking at something like an INI study or evaluation to just see what kind of cost impacts that's having on your system.
You know, so there's no time like the present. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no time like the present. I think any community that has old sewers, it's worth at least a desktop look at what should we expect to see for sewer flow versus what are we seeing? And does that point to a potential INI problem? And that is pretty easy to do up front. And more often than not, most places have some level of INI issue that's worth taking a look at and at least evaluating whether it makes sense to, like you said, spend a little money now to save a lot of money down the road.
And since you're talking about money, Wes, is there money available to help begin this review?
The SRF, the State Revolving Fund Program, does consider rehabilitation projects as an eligible cost for their loan program. It's a reduced rate loan that helps bring costs down quite a bit for a lot of communities. There are probably, and I'm not exactly familiar with all the funding options out there, but I think CDBG, a community development block grant program out there that will help to a certain level.
I think what I'm hearing is that a lot of communities probably need more education as to why we should be looking at this regularly so we can identify to ourselves how much we could be saving in the future or daily. That's an amazing assessment to make there. Could you give me some more input on those basic principles and what are you looking for?
So other than what I discussed before, looking at the backups and overflows, you can actually test for INI. One of those main ways is through smoke testing, which involves you setting up a blower within the sewer system that pumps a artificial non-toxic smoke through the sanitary sewer lines. The smoke is pressurized and will follow the path of leaks and reveal possible points of entry for INI. And the smoke will come out of damaged manholes, sewer pipes, roof drains, etc., where those weak points are. Another method for INI is dye testing. This is when water is colored with a non-toxic dye and it's pumped through the groundwater or stormwater system that is being evaluated. If the dye appears within that sanitary sewer system, it indicates where the leak occurs, which typically you can check at each manhole and see where that dye is starting to show up, and you can see where that leak is coming into the system. And then one of the more common ways that Snyder looks at INI testing is through CCTV, which is when a small camera is inserted into the manhole and it travels down the length of the pipe. There is usually a operator outside the manhole, and the camera within the pipe sends real-time video to the operator, and they can evaluate and mark possible areas of concern. These can be cracks, faulty or deteriorating seals, root intrusions, things along that nature. And typically, they just run from manhole to manhole and record possible issues.
Awesome. So it sounds like we collectively here have identified sources of our INI, whether that be direct connections or some accidental stormwater getting into the system. What do we do to mitigate the INI?
With mitigating INI, typically There are two different methods. There is full pipe repair and there's point repair. For full pipe repair, you can do various linings through CIPP lining, slip lining, pipe insertion, spraying the pipe with an additional coating, or taking the pipe completely out and replacing it. And that's more common if you see numerous problems throughout the length of the pipe. Now, you can also do point repair if there is one specific section of the pipe that is having more problems than the rest, like there's a crack or there's a large amount of deterioration in that area. And you can do cement grout or like mechanical point repair, which is when you kind of have a rubber seal and it blows up like a balloon and pushes it up against the wall and creates an additional seal in that area to prevent inflow and infiltration from occurring.
We've identified some INI issues within the collection system. What are some infrastructure improvements we can make to tackle some of these situations?
I think one of the most common that we have, at least especially in Central Iowa and the Midwest area here, is we have a lot of clay tile sewers that have a lot of leaky joints. They're not real watertight sewers because it wasn't really a big issue when they were put in back in the 40s, 50s, 60s timeframe. So one of the primary causes of infiltration in sewers is all those joints, especially associated with a high groundwater table where the water can flow right in. So there are some trenchless rehabilitation techniques and things that can be done inside of the sewer, inside of the sewer system to stem that infiltration, to slow it down, to get rid of a lot of it. I don't know that it's realistic to expect to get rid of all of the infiltration just because there's a lot of little holes in the system everywhere. But what you're looking to do is to make a dent in it, to really knock it down an order of magnitude or more. So some of the things that are commonly done, you can grout the joints with a chemical grout that's pumped through a system into each of the joints and kind of seals up the joint itself. And then the soil surrounding the joint stems the water flow coming in through those joints. Another potential location for water to come into a sewer system is at the service taps. There's even some sealing techniques, grouting and lining that can be done up into service laterals. Sometimes a lot of the infiltration comes from those service laterals, which is forgotten about. And causes some complications for getting that done a lot of times because sometimes it's considered the homeowner's problem, sometimes it's considered the city's problem or city's ownership. Sometimes the service lateral is considered owned by the city. Sometimes it's considered owned by the property owner. So there could be some complications in how to address that and sealing up those service laterals, which can be a major source of infiltration if you think about each service lateral in a community times however many homes there are. CIPP is a common lining method to seal up sewers, although its impact or influence on INI is less than some of the other rehabilitation techniques because it does allow water to still travel through those service tap connections and between the hose pipe and the liner. But it can be done with a couple added components like end seals or maybe in conjunction with the grouting to help seal up those pipes that have lots of joints and lots of leaky cracks and infiltration points along the sewer line.
Yeah, that's great to hear. It sounds like you have identified a lot of options for what you said, making a dent in the ultimate issue.
The INI doesn't have to be a standalone target of your inspection. Obviously, if you're maintaining your system really well, you're going to be doing some kind of inspection just in general for the condition of your sewer system, whether it's root intrusions or broken pipes, collapsing pipes, things like that. So a lot of times those inspections and that evaluation will go hand in hand. You want to know if your pipe is collapsing, and if it's collapsing, there's a good chance there's INI to go along with it. And so a lot of times the solution can be twofold there. You can be addressing maybe a structural deficiency in the system and at the same time also addressing some of the INI in the system as well.
You sound like you've had quite a bit of experiences in helping with INI projects, problems addressing the situation. Can you explain to me some of what Snyder & Associates as a firm has been doing related to these projects, project setup, maybe evaluating the need and all the way through construction?
A lot of times it does come out of the treatment system design or the overall facility planning for an upgrade to a treatment system, because that is where a lot of that work gets done anyway. As you're designing that treatment, you need to know how much water is coming into it, and that lends itself to doing some of that measuring and evaluation. So a lot of times the sewer rehab or INI program will stem directly from that, if at all possible. We've also done projects that just straight come out of, hey, we know we have an INI problem and we want to address it, even though our plant is running fine. So we've come at it from both directions. as you mentioned, Lindsay, we've done a lot of it just primarily because that's what is a big issue in a lot of our small communities, especially with old sewer systems. It's a major issue. And so it gets addressed a lot. We've done everything from just a standalone INI evaluation study all the way to a complete system facility plan study, which includes a treatment plant as well as evaluation of flows in the INI. We've taken that then to the next step, a sewer rehabilitation project or program to address the INI and maybe structural deficiencies as well. And then we've done the construction services along with that as well, because a lot of small communities, they don't have the staff or the skills to manage a construction program like that. Also along with that, the financial assistance, the applications, the procuring of some of the state loan programs or grant programs, we can assist with that as well.
We talk about the need for upgrading our sewer system to meet INI needs. It's probably something to consider recommending to any of our clients that if you're doing any sort of infrastructure upgrade on a street and you're going to be opening that street up, that it's also very relevant to be looking at the sewer system at that time.
Definitely. I think if any community is doing a large reconstruction, especially of a street, because a lot of times if you can't do a trenchless solution where you're going in to rehab the pipe without tearing up the street, if you do have major collapses or failures or other issues and a street program is going on to reconstruct street above it, that is the time to do it because you've already got the street tore up and the access is much, much easier.
That's good to discuss because I think a lot of times we hear how sewer projects become street projects and wastewater treatment plant projects become slip lining projects. And it's not out of the lack of need. These things are all related to each other. And that's where if you had that annual look-see within your system, you might have a better awareness of what is coming. So you're not maybe caught off guard all the time.
I encourage everybody I talk to, especially in small communities, that if you don't have a regular televising program or inspection program of some sort to evaluate your system, you're missing out. Because then if you don't know what state your sewer's in, you don't know where you might see some significant savings, and you're going to miss out on opportunities, especially if you're doing a street program and you have maybe 3rd Street and 4th Street both need some work, and you're CIP planning, you're trying to figure out which one we should do, and you just pick one out of the hat, and it turns out that you pick 3rd Street, but 4th Street really has major sewer issues. Well, if you knew that, that can weight your decision and play into what might take a higher priority because you're going to see some cost savings by doubling up on projects like that.
That all ties nicely into a lot of the discussion we've had on previous podcasts about capital improvement planning. And it sounds like through regular televising or maybe even including investigations within a capital plan, then you'll have a better idea of, like Wes said, what streets need to be addressed and is it more than just a pavement matter and what the wastewater plant might be doing in 5 years. It sounds like that ties nicely into a regular conversation, capital improvement planning, looking ahead, being aware of your city infrastructure. Do any of you have any closing thoughts on any recent projects that you really had a good success story to tell?
We had a small community where we were looking at doing some sewer rehabilitation, and through the televising program discovered a water line that had been bored through the sewer, had subsequently corroded and was pumping directly into the sanitary sewer. That investigation and the subsequent repair of that cuts the city's water use and as well as their flow to their treatment plant by a third. So amazing impact that would not have been caught unless for the investigation and the review and evaluation of that project. Another success that we ran into with a sewer rehabilitation program that was for INI as well as just structural deficiencies in a small community. We had planned out the worst parts of the city to do some rehab. And with the city's available budget, we were able to do half of the city's sewer system, the rehabilitation program. And it just so happened that when we got our bids back, that the pricing from the contractor was very competitive and the city was able to add in additional lining length. And so the city now has about 3/4 of effectively a brand new system, and had tremendous impacts on the INI downstream. Whether they got lucky or it just worked out in their favor, it was a success for how that one worked out. It made a big difference in their INI to their pump station and up to their plant.
I think a lot of communities can see being aware of their INI issues as part of their insurance policy, because when it rains, if you have an operator that can't sleep or leave town because rain threatens to back up into someone's basement, that's the kind of risk that as a community you don't need to put on your staff and your maintenance crews to be concerned about all the time. Mitigate those risks for your own benefits.
Yeah, and there's definitely overtime costs associated with that as well as staff retention, I think. If you've got a system that your staff can never take a break or have a vacation or a holiday, it's hard to keep good people with stuff like that too. Something to consider.
Thanks for joining me today. I learned a lot about inflow and infiltration and what our clients need to be aware of for planning ahead, prevention, maintenance, reducing, elimination, you know, just overall the financial side of things, as well as the public outreach and the services Snyder & Associates has to offer. It was really great talking to you both today.
Thank you for listening to Snyder & Associates podcast series, a civil engineering, planning, and design firm focused on thinking beyond engineering to improve quality of life within the communities we serve. Find content related to this episode on snyder-associates.com.